Hey guys, welcome back to the Homework Assignment Podcast. I'm your host, RJ Patino, and today we have a Q&A episode ready for you guys. If you guys haven't followed us before, we have this podcast, obviously, and what we do is we interview a lot of entrepreneurs, business owners that have made it, that have been successful in many different industries, and we kind of get down to the nitty-gritty of, you know, the balance between home life and work life and kind of the different tactics that they're doing, as well as brainstorming together. And yeah, that's pretty much what we're all about. So we appreciate you guys listening in, following us. And like I said, today we have a Q&A. We haven't done one of these in quite a while. We've had back-to-back guests as well as a huge hiatus. We had a lot of stuff going on in our company that we had to kind of get situated, taken care of. But now we're back and we plan to remain a week to week. So again, thanks for joining in. So let's see what questions we have.
Got some good ones for you today. All right, I'll start off here.
They're probably not that good.
They're pretty good.
They're probably pretty good.
Let's see. Question number one for you is, you have previously stated that failures are opportunities to learn valuable lessons. What is the most recent failure you have experienced, and what did you learn from it?
Well, first of all, if I stated that, I must be pretty good. Just kidding. Second of all, well, let's see. My whole life is full of failures. I failed at picking great friends. I'm just kidding. let's see. I guess if I could pinpoint a certain failure, it would be something I think I've talked about before. Was in, I think it was the winter of 2020 or 2019. It's kind of blurring all together at this point, but what I specifically remember is I had been trying to build my company for some time at this point, and I had quite a bit of things going on. I was smaller then. It was just me, had a couple dudes, and we were doing some remodels and stuff, and I kind of got ahead of myself. I didn't know enough about business, and I thought just because I knew enough about construction, I'd been doing it with my hands for a while, that I could start this company. And so I tried to get, you know, more foundational, as far as having an actual structure in my business. And by doing that, I made some poor decisions, took on some jobs that I shouldn't maybe have taken, as well as hiring some people that, I shouldn't have been hiring, cause I didn't know the first thing to look for in kind of employees or people that I needed at the time. And, you know, basically September, again, I think it was of 2020, I had a good amount of money. I had some jobs going on. I was doing stuff my way. Things were working out pretty decently. And the minute I tried to expand, it took only about 4 months for me to go from doing good, I won't say great, but doing decent, to literally bankrupting myself. And I remember that towards the end of that year, we had a family trip planned up to Colorado, and just to go spend like a week there over Christmas, kind of celebrate Christmas up there with my wife's family. And by the time the week before came to actually head out, I realized I literally had no money. It was the first time since I've been married, or even basically since I started dating my wife, that I didn't have money to pay for my own bills. And it was super difficult. I remember having to kind of drop my pride and going to my father-in-law, who, you know, I got married in March of 2019. So just 6 months later, I literally didn't even have money to pay for gas to drive up to Colorado. Gas wasn't that bad back then, as it is now, but still I didn't have money for that. I didn't have money to pay my rent. So I had to ask for help. And, I've always had two points throughout, I guess there's a few points during the year where I really, like, I always hustle, but when it comes to time for vacation and Christmas, Halloween, and Thanksgiving, those are my four, sometimes five things, depending on how many vacations I go on, that I just, no matter what happens, I need to make sure that my bank account is where I want it to be over these periods of time so I can actually enjoy my vacation. Because if I'm struggling financially or if I'm having issues, financially, me mentally, I just don't operate well. So even if I'm on vacation, I'm truly not enjoying it. And so same thing with Christmas time. If like I don't have a good cushion in my account, I'm struggling. And so towards that end of the year, I mean, I hit all three of those holidays, which has always kind of been a goal that I was able to execute on, just having that cushion, and I didn't have any money. And so it was tough. And I, you know, family knew of my situation. I got a lot of feedback on, you know, like, hey, you need to go do this, or you need to go work for this company. You need to learn a little bit more about business before you start your own company. And I was just kind of beating myself up like, hey, I tried, I failed. And, that was a pinpoint for me where I was, you know, I had two options. Either I succumb to that failure and I go get a great job and make some good money. But that would also entail giving up my dreams of being, you know, kind of building an empire. And, or I could, you know, accept that failure, figure out what I did wrong and learn from it. And so inevitably, from, you know, being here now, I obviously pushed through it. And I think, you know, you grow up, I grew up hearing at least that, hey, you have to fail to succeed, and failure is all part of success. I learned that in football and stuff. And, I don't think I truly, I mean, truly, truly learned that until I lost everything. I think growing up as a kid, football and stuff was great. Like, you know, hey, I wanted to start, all that kind of stuff. But that wasn't like my life. For some people that is. And I think those people go pro. But for me, it wasn't. So I never had anything to where like my entire life was on the line until this moment. And because I failed, everything that I tried doing that I wanted to do more than anything in my life, my dream, if I failed at it, like that was just such a pivotal moment. And it taught me that, I love failure, because every time I fail, as much as it hurts, the amount of stuff I learn from it and the amount of growth I get from it because of that experience, I now recognize that. And I'm now able to actually sit down, get through the pain, get through the emotional, drain of, you know, whatever crap just happened, but actually be able to be like, okay, got through it. Now I'm good. Now I'm going to learn from it. And here's what I'm going to do differently. Here I'm implementing this system. I'm putting this operation in place. I'm going to do this next time. And yeah, that now I love failure. So every time that we have a challenge or I mess up on something, it does suck. And now it costs some, you know, sometimes my mistakes cost me tens of thousands of dollars. I've had a mistake cost me over, you know, $500,000 before. But what I will say is, no matter what bad has happened or what those failures were, because of the lessons I learned from it, I've either made more money following that, or my life has gotten better because of that lesson I've learned. So for me, I invite failure. Obviously we try to be the best we can in everything we do. I try to be the best person I possibly can, but failure is always going to be there. And I have learned to accept that. I have now learned to look for that failure. That also changed my mindset on jobs, like looking for failure. How did that affect me going to our projects? Well, before, I remember I had a project that, you know, it was one of my first huge projects I did. And I had partnered kind of with my uncle at the time, who had been in construction for over a decade. And I remember getting this job done, and I'm like, hey man, it's ready for you to come take a look and do a quality check. And he came in, and I was so excited. I remember even telling my wife, like, yeah, my uncle's coming tomorrow. Jensen, who's been on our podcast before, I was like, he's about to come in and I see all this amazing stuff that I did, and I'm sure he's going to, you know, be proud, all that kind of stuff. And he's going to be excited for the future of the company. And he came in and was like, this wrong, that wrong. Like, hey, this is not good quality. And I was just like, wow. And so in learning this lesson, now I'm like that when I go to jobs. And it's not necessarily to tear people down, tear our project managers down, or to say, hey, we suck at what we do. But it's really to look for those areas that we're failing in, because that's opportunity to make it better for the next client. First, fix it there, but also make it better for the next time. And that's why I believe our company has truly gone from, you know, getting jobs from social media and just kind of hustling and doing sales to now people are calling us, hey, you know, you did work at my best friend's house and I want you to come do my full home remodel. Hey, I see what you're doing. I've, you know, talked to so-and-so. And so it's, you know, kicked in that referral basis. And that is because we've bettered ourselves. I've seen a lot of companies that have made mistakes, which is all part of the game, but they either kick themselves in the, you know, in the foot for, you know, that failure, they can't get over it, or they just don't see, they accept it, but they do nothing to fix it. And ultimately they end up failing completely. And then they never get back up again because they feel like they can't. So anyways, I think that whole mindset of failure and understanding how essential failure is in success, no matter what industry you're in, like understanding that is truly a game changer and it will change your entire life like it has mine. So long answer to
pretty good question though, huh?
Yeah, it's pretty decent. We got to start recording who's asking all these so we can like,
well, some of call them, call them out on it. Anonymous and we'll respect that.
Oh, is that because it was you?
That one? No, that wasn't me. All right. You ready for number two?
Yep.
Okay. Take a nice sip of water. Get ready.
Kind of getting over this little bug that's been going around my throat still.
Yeah, me too.
I got kicked in the butt last week.
All right, well, number two is congratulations on the new baby. Going from two to now three daughters. Well, they know that you had two and now you have three. So going from two to now three daughters at home, have you noticed any changes in your work and home life balance? And for those expecting children, how can they prepare for the changes to come?
Ooh. It's actually a pretty cool question. So I have one philosophy that kind of goes into this. And that is, again, it does depend on what you do. But I believe whether you own a company, whether you work inside of a company, it doesn't matter. If you have a money problem, all you got to do is make more money. And that may sound ignorant, that may sound stupid, but it all comes down to the person and the initiative. You know, if you don't have a job and you don't have money, you could start selling pest control. You could start selling solar. You could start doing anything to make money. Making money in America is pretty easy. And so for me, I have always, I think me, my wife and I, we have gotten a lot of criticism on how early she got pregnant, how soon we got married, how many kids we wanted to have. And most of this isn't necessarily family. A lot of it's outside. There are some family that are, you know, I remember when my wife got pregnant, some of our family was like, really? Like that soon? Like you're only X years old. Like, you know, why? You should have waited. You should have traveled a little. But one thing I will say, apart from other benefits of having children, happiness, starting our family, and besides the fact that's just what me and my wife wanted, one of the things I liked is with every kid comes a bigger financial responsibility. So again, it may sound dumb, but in my head, this is how I truly think. New kid on the way. Cool. One, I'm going to make more money because I have to. There's also a faith part to this that I believe we're supposed to, you know, procreate and expand the family of God. So I believe there's blessings, both financial and spiritual, that come with that. So those two things mixed together, it's like, hey, well, one, I believe I'm getting blessed for it, but two, you have another kid. And if you look up statistically how much a kid costs every year, all that kind of stuff, like you don't have a choice. What are you going to do? Not feed your kid, not put diapers on them. Like you don't have a choice. And so for me, it's exciting because with every kid that comes, there's that anxiety, the no, okay, crap, I got to start hustling even more. And so it keeps me pushing. And so I think, yeah, for me, kids are kind of a financial motivator. Obviously, I love my daughters to death, but also there is a little bit of a benefit for me. And so I really think it comes down to perspective. A lot of people are scared to have kids early because, you know, like, oh, well, I haven't graduated college, or, you know, I'm not financially stable and I can't support a kid. Well, what better way to make yourself do something than do something where to make yourself or put yourself in a position to where you don't have a choice? Because when you don't have a choice, you get stuff done. And so kids do that. So for any of you guys out there, like, hey, you know, you're married or you're about to get married, or you guys are thinking about having a baby, but you're trying to, you know, your wife may work and you're trying to build a company, like, okay, put yourself in a position where you don't have a choice. And inevitably, as humans, that survival instinct in us kicks in and you make it happen because you don't have a choice. And so for me, that's truly what kids have done to me. I mean, it's nervous, and there's, you know, there's so much more that goes into kids, excitement and stuff like that. But I think for me, you know, kids definitely are a motivator. Cause obviously you want to give your children everything you want. But I will say, I think having kids early on before my company was even ever really truly established is part of the reason, or plays a part into the success that we've built here, into the some of the financial freedom that we've gained, and all of that. So I don't know. Does that answer the question? I'm trying to remember the initial question.
I had two questions. It was, I mean, you answered the second half of it, which was for those expecting children, how can they prepare for changes to come? And that's basically.
Well, I guess that is, yeah, that's a two part. So like preparing for the change to come is, here's the deal. There's what change is going to, I mean, kids are one of those things like you can actually prepare. Right. And so, I think that's kind of one of the outliers in life, is cause you can kind of, there are a few things you can prepare for cause you know they're coming. But when I compare that to, you know, entrepreneurship, cause that's what this podcast is about, is like, you can't prepare for what success you're going to have next year because you have no idea what's coming. You can't prepare for certain things. And so it really comes down to being able to adapt. And, you know, when it comes to children, people always ask, hey, how was it going from 1 to 2? Or how was it going from 2 to 3? From 1 to 2 was, you know, one, having a kid in general was a huge, I mean, it was a huge difference, right? In me and my wife's life. We had to think about, you know, where we were going, if it was too loud, especially when the baby was younger. And now, you know, as the baby gets older, it's like, hey, if we want to go do this, how long do we need to get a babysitter for? All that fun stuff. And I would say that you really, truly can't be prepared for something, even if you know it's coming. If a baby's coming, the way you prepare, one, is you got to prepare financially. Two, you got to prepare as far as like getting baby stuff in the house. Other than that, you don't know what's to come. You don't know how your baby's going to be, if it's going to be crying all the time, if it's not going to be. I think, you know, when it comes to preparation, a lot of people get this idea in their head and they think they have this solid plan. And no matter how solid your plan is, it's never going to go the way you think it is. I don't care if that's in business. I don't care if it's like, hey, we're going to have a baby at this time. You know, we're going to have this. We're going to buy this, this, and this. And this is how our baby's going to grow up. Like, you have no clue. My first child, I love her to death. She was born with some medical issues. We spent a year going to different specialists. You know, if you name a specialist, guarantee we've gone to it, and she's fine. She's doing great. But, you know, that wasn't my ideal, you know, first, you know, the idea I had in my head of having my first kid, and nothing could have prepared me for that. You know, and apart from that, you know, I had our baby during COVID. It was emergency C-section, so we weren't able to have any parents there or anything like that. So, you know, it was, I won't say it was a nightmare, but I mean, it was honestly kind of a little bit of a nightmare. I did not enjoy it. And my point in this is that you really can't truly be prepared for something. So the one skill I would say that you need to have instead of the skill of being prepared is the skill of adapting, the skill of being ready to pivot and make moves and changes to in any scenario that you're required to pivot in. And so, you know, if you're preparing for a kid, that's great. Prepare to have a kid, do, you know, prepare financially, get your house ready, all that kind of stuff. But when that baby's born, you know, you may have to pivot, or you may have to pivot because your job's going to take you somewhere else. So really understanding and being available, or making yourself available to actually adapt, understanding that when change comes, you're not going to sit there and freeze, but you're actually going to be able to execute, make a decision, and understand, you know, that, or at least trust yourself enough to know that you can make a decision on the spot and adapt when you have to. If you're able to adapt, you can succeed in any industry, in any phase of life, whether you go from banking to construction, construction to fishing. It really doesn't matter. It's all about adapting, because all these different industries, being a parent, being a business owner, it doesn't really matter. They all require similar skills, right? And they require different levels of that skill. And some of them require different mixtures of the same skills you would need in different areas. And so it really is coming down to adaption. and being able to adapt to the scene, to the scenario, and not so much being prepared. Now, with that being said, you know, always try to be prepared. We always try to prepare ourselves for, you know, next year. You know, obviously we have a plan of doing more business. We have a, I have a plan with my wife to have more kids. And so we're trying to prepare for that, right? But what it really ultimately comes down to is not, there has not been one situation in business. There's been a, there's been a few, not very many, but there's most of the time things don't go my way in business. Most of the time things don't go away in me and my wife's life. And so adapting, being able to pivot is truly, in my opinion, how to succeed at anything is being able to do that.
Ready for question number three?
Question number three.
All right, let's see here.
Can you guys see my mismatching socks right now on camera? No.
We'll show
awkward. Please cut
we'll
that.
A little bonus clip for that.
Well, we're thinking about starting a company called Mismatching
Socks.
Well,
don't tell them. Hold on. We haven't even patented the idea yet.
Well, don't say that. You could just say we patented it.
We did
patent it. All right, wait, Kyle, as you're filming this, patent that idea real quick. And then, anyways, we're sorry. We're thinking about starting a mismatched sock company. And I know you guys would buy it, so don't lie to me. Because I would wear it. Matter of fact, I'm wearing mismatched socks right now.
All right, you ready for number three? This one's a switch back to business mode here. It is, how do you know when it is time to pull the trigger and hire more people?
Oh. That's a great question. I sigh just because I don't know why it took me so long to figure this out. I feel like it's pretty obvious. But I mean, when you don't know business, it's not obvious, but, most companies do this wrong, in my opinion, right? Everybody has different opinions, but here's my opinion. A lot of people say, hey, you know what? I have a plan. Next year, we're going to do $10 million in business, right? Right now, you're doing $5 million. Next year, we're going to do 10. We need more people to do that because we got to double our business. Okay. Logically, that makes sense. What happens is people go out, they hire people with the anticipation that the work's going to be there. And what happens is nothing goes as planned, as we just talked about, right? So not saying you don't do 10 million that year, but it doesn't happen on your time frame. So what happens is people go out, they hire all these people, they increase their overhead, they increase their payroll, and the jobs aren't there yet. And so they may come, but by the time they come, they're already paying all this overhead without the actual money coming in, and they start putting themselves in a rut. And so they start hurting themselves. They go out of business. And they, because they're hiring on the expectation of work being there, when in reality, the way that it should happen is you hire once the work is there. And a lot of people have a hard time with this because they'll say, hey, you know what? Well, you know, I don't want to wait until I get the work because then I'm not going to have the right people to fill that work. And then I'm going to be in a rut because I don't have anybody to start those jobs or do that work. Well, yeah, but isn't that a better situation to be in than hiring people and giving away your money before you even have the work to pay them? I would take that all day long. I would rather have 50 jobs that I'm trying to fulfill, clients getting upset because I can't put them, can't get their jobs done on time. I'd rather have that and all that money so that I can hire those people in order to execute those projects. People do it backwards. And I understand why they do it backwards because I used to have that mindset because it makes sense. Well, if I have to double my jobs next year, I need to double my people and double this. That only makes sense to me a little bit in sales. Because sales, you go out and you find people should be finding their work and should be hustling and bringing in the work, right? So that kind of makes sense with sales. But as far as project management, whatever industry you're in, whether it's more chefs or more construction workers or more accountants, like you need to make sure that you have the work before you hire them. Because if not, you're just giving away your money without the work. And sure, they may seem busy. Maybe you can keep them busy. That's great. But if you can't, that's a problem, right? So to know when you need to hire is simply based on the work. If you have too much work and not enough people, hire. If you have not enough work and too many people, fire. Super simple. That's how you keep a business running. And you know, we there, and again, adapting, right? So it's hard. It's hard to fire people. It's hard to hire people. It's kind of a scary situation because, you know, when it comes with hiring, one, not only are you hiring somebody and yes, you have to pay more money. So then you have the pressure of having to bring in, make sure that there's actual work there. But two, then there's a responsibility, producer, you're fired. Then there's a responsibility of, yeah. Well, I'm here to set an example, you know, fire quick, hire slow. That's actually a literal thing you guys should do. But, I suck at that, by the way. So, I mean, I say you should do that, but don't learn from me because I have a hard time doing that. And we'll probably get into that at some point in a podcast. But, yeah, so basically, you know, there's that second part of responsibility where now you have this person, you have their life, their well-being, you know, everything that they need to provide for themselves and their family. Now that's on you, because if you don't do your job, if you don't bring in the work, you don't make sure your company is running like a well-oiled machine, and it goes under, that person's out of work. And that's how I look at it. I don't know if other business owners look at it that way. I would assume they do. And that's why being an entrepreneur is not an ideal career for many people, because the pressure, people buckle under pressure. Entrepreneurs need to have a high tolerance of pressure, and it is extremely hard. I would lie if I'd say there's days where I'm not scared out of my mind. I'm not worried. I'm not, you know, feeling somewhat depressed sometimes. I'm not crying. I'm not, you know, like I go through all those emotions consistently, and I'm not trying to scare anybody away from entrepreneurship. Being an entrepreneur is freaking awesome. There's so many great benefits, but right now I'm talking about, you know, hiring and firing people or knowing when to hire. And I think if you just follow that simple rule to know when to hire, is when you have too much work and not enough people, that's when you hire. And if you don't have enough work and you have too many people, there's a certain, I'm not going to get into it now, but there's a certain part or a time when you know, it's like, okay, hey, I need a fire. But that's all business 101. We can get into that another day. So,
Well, actually, we don't need to get into it another day. The next question that I have for you here is... Okay, here we go. Number four is, I have several very close relationships amongst my employees. If necessary, how would you go about letting someone go that is a close friend to you?
That was someone from our company, guaranteed. Someone wants to know how they would ever get fired. Here's the deal. I think there's a difference in letting someone go and firing. And that difference for me is that if you do something that you are not supposed to do deliberately, and that hurts somebody on our team or hurts the company, and you do that on purpose, not like making a mistake, but doing it on purpose, that requires a fire, meaning like, hey, you broke trust. You did something that you weren't supposed to do that you knew you weren't supposed to do, and you still did it. You know, what does Mufasa say? You deliberately disobeyed me. Love that line. It's my favorite line. Mufasa is coming out soon, guys. Get tickets. I'm not promoting Disney right now, but get tickets. But anyways, that is a fire. Like, hey, there's, you know, disrespect gone. Then there's letting go. Letting go covers most of the areas for having to separate someone from a company, or at least my company, in my opinion. And that is like, hey, life situations, you're failing at work due to X, Y, Z. And so a lot of times it's never deliberately, right? Sometimes there's stuff going on. Sometimes people are underperforming. And there could be a million reasons that are affecting them personal that's doing that. Or, hey, you know what? Our business is slowing down and I just can't afford to keep you right now. And so to understand, I think for me, to help my people understand the difference there really dictates how that conversation is going to go. Because obviously, if someone steals from my company, I've had someone steal money from my company, that isn't, hey, man, listen, you know, we really enjoy having you. We just can't, you know, we just got to let you go right now. We just can't have you here. That's, hey, dude, get the F out of my face or I'm going to freaking knock you out. You stole from me, right? So, but on the part of letting go, it's like there might be a few reasons. I think, you know, just playing two different scenarios in my head, like if there wasn't enough work, right? There's that conversation like, hey, man, you know, we've had a lot of good things happen, but here's where we are right now, and I just can't afford you in your position at this moment. And so let's talk about it. You know, I have to let you go right now, but let's talk about what we can do to help make that easier transition. And hey, man, well, here's our plan. I want to bring you back because you were valuable. You know, those are the conversations I would hope to have if I have to let people go for that reason. And I would hope that somebody that we've treated good, somebody that we've helped excel in life and that we've contributed to, and somebody that we have a great relationship with, that they're going to understand that the only reason we're having this conversation is because I don't personally have a choice, right? Now, there is that survival, you know, mentality in all of us. Like, you know, people are probably going to want to have that conversation, like, well, let's talk about this. What can I do to help? If there's a situation to be able to fix that, you know, situation, like if that person's in sales and we're lacking jobs, well, it's like, yeah, man, I'm going to have to cut your salary and you go on commission only. If you're down for the company, let's get it done. Let's get it work, I believe, right? Or maybe it still is coming down to, hey, I just have to let you go. We actually had that, happen just recently. And I think that conversation went the best way it could. And we all left on good terms, but somebody's life just wasn't in par with where we were needing to go. And you have to understand, I think being a leader is so much more than just owning, like, just because you own a business, that doesn't make you a leader. Being a leader, requires, caring. It requires love. It requires charity. It requires putting the interests of your team before the interests of yourself. It requires all this. And I'm not talking about when everybody's looking. I'm talking behind the doors, right? I'm talking about when nobody's looking. That to me is what a good leader is. And when you do that stuff, your team notices. So if you do have that situation where you do gotta let go of family, friend, because of a situation that it's just unfortunate, that will help lessen that blow, right? Now, if you have a friend or someone in the company that is, you know, underperforming, that is another conversation a conversation you need to have with yourself, that I've had with myself many times, like, hey, this person isn't producing, this person is, you know, not making our company money, or they're losing our company money. And the first thing that an owner will think of is like, okay, I need to eliminate that problem. Well, how do you eliminate that problem? Well, the easiest thing to do is let that problem go. Sometimes it's not easy, but just as far as like the solution, that's the easiest solution, is eliminate the problem. But if you step back and have the conversation that you should have with yourself is, have I done everything on my end to make sure that that person has everything they need to succeed? Because if you've done that and they're failing, then that's no longer on you, right? And you can have those conversations 1 month, 2 month, 3 month, and if it's still failing, well, then at that point, even if that person gets mad, at the end of the day, they failed. And there's nothing you can do about it. If they're not performing, they're not performing. You're a business. You have to operate. You need to make money, because it's like a chain, right? If one bad link can ruin that entire integrity of the chain. So if you're having one person fail that can't be fixed, are you willing to let them drag down everybody else that is doing good just because you love that person too much? I think for the most part, you know, it's not easy to have that conversation or figure out when you need to let people go. But the way I go about it is, first, when somebody is not producing or somebody is failing, I first look at me. I first look at our leadership team, right? Have we done everything in our power? Have we provided all the resources for this person to execute their job? Have we provided the right training? Have we provided the right materials? If any of those, and any of those questions are no, guess what? That person's not getting let go. We need to fix our end. Now, if the answer is yes, at that point, it's have a conversation with that person, figure out what's truly going on. We do this. We did this for a little while. We just started back up doing it. Is our personal, professional, financial goals. If you have these regular meetings with your employees to really understand not just the work goals, but their personal lives, right? Like, what are they wanting out of their personal life? Are you helping them get there? Does your vision help them achieve their vision of their own life? If you're involved in the lives of the people you work with, you're going to be able to foresee these things before they actually happen, right? And whether that is, hey, you know, this person's life is just not supporting what they need to do for us right now, so this isn't the best place for them. you'll be able to foresee that, or you're going to be able to foresee that, like, hey, this is a problem. Now we're going to be able to fix it before it really becomes an actual problem. So that truly helps. But at the end of the day, I mean, it's not easy firing people. It's not easy letting go of people. And especially if they're your family or friends, like, we're a huge family friend, company. And there's, you know, I would be lying if I said there wasn't moments where I'm like, hey, I probably should be letting go of this person. And there's one thing that has held me back every time, and that is looking at myself. Have I done everything? If the answer is no, that person isn't getting let go, because I can't blame somebody for failure to perform if I'm failing to perform in order to help them perform, if that makes sense, right? So if you look at that, here's what I think. I think everybody has potential, and a true leader creates leaders. They don't find them. I think everybody's capable of being a leader. I think there's been plenty of instances, and this isn't a pat on my back, but this is more of just an understanding of what of the example. But Kyle, right, one of our producers, I mean, he did electrical for us for a while. He quit his bartending job. He came on to Elder. He was doing electrical work. And in the beginning, it was exciting. It was new, fun messing with wires. I understand that. But then summer hits, it's hot, it's in the attic, it's, you know, all the chaos that comes with it. And he doesn't have a passion for electric, so why would he really enjoy it when it gets hard, right? And so, you know, he ended up leaving to go do some other stuff, go back to kind of bartending and stuff, because we didn't have any positions open. But then when the time came where we decided to, you know, kind of do something different, it was like, hey, well, you know, what are Kyle's skills? Kyle's skills are, he went to school for music production. He loves Purdue. He's social. Everybody loves Kyle. He's a great face. People love being around him. He would be a great media producer. He would be a great film producer, right? Getting all of our media, all our content. He'd be great at vendor relationships, at events, at sponsorships. Like, and guess where he is right now? He's there and he's thriving. We're doing something great, not just on the podcast, but with our social media platform. Like, he's been killing it. And that was a lesson for me that, like, hey, when you are putting people in the wrong place because you don't know them, or you're ignoring what they care and want most out of life, like, if they fail, whose fault is that? That's your fault as a leader. That's your fault as the owner. I 100% believe that. And so, with that being said, that may be kind of biased, because I don't ever want to let go of anybody. I wish I was a multimillionaire, and even my family and friends that were struggling to produce, I would be so rich that they could just stick around. But also, at the end of the day, the one thing that matters the most is your business. So when it comes to firing people, if there's a person that needs to be let go, looking at yourself first will teach you a lesson of how you need to be a better leader. And when you lead better, then there's better production out of your employees. Or two, if they're not producing, you need to cut the ties, because why would you let that weak link ruin the entire chain and let them bring everybody down with them, right? So I don't know. I don't think there's any good way to go about firing people or letting go of people. It's like I said, luckily throughout my career, most people have just knew they were failing or didn't like to be here, and they kind of weeded themselves out and dipped out and left. Just recently, we actually had to have a sit down and actually let go of the first person that we've had to officially do that with, and it wasn't fun. Like I said, I think at the end of the day, if you're truly invested in the people, in their lives, and you truly take it onto yourself, that is a huge, you understand the responsibility you're putting on yourself as an owner when you hire people, and when you understand that and you take that seriously, you're going to be in a hopefully positions that, where you don't have to have those hard conversations. With that being said, life happens. And also it comes down to hiring people, you know, making sure you have the right criteria of the people you're looking for to join your company. you know, that's hard too. That's a whole nother segment of like, how do I know who to hire? You know, we've had in construction's insane. Like everybody says they're qualified. Oh, I can do drywall. I can do this. And I look at all these jobs and sometimes there are pictures on Google or there are pictures of work they never did or they just assisted with. And then all of a sudden we're trusting them on a huge high-end client and they get done with the job and our client's calling us like, what in the frick is this? Like people will do anything for money, anything. They'll say anything. They'll do anything. They're like salesmen, right? They're selling themselves. And a lot of times they oversell themselves. So some, you know, in construction, at least for us, it's hard. Even with people with amazing resumes, it's like, well, I need to experience it firsthand what you do. Otherwise, nothing matters because we've been told a million times that people can do great work. Oh, I've done this and custom cabinets and blah, blah, blah. And then it comes down to the fact of, dude, it looks like my 3-year-old did that with some Mickey Mouse hammers and screwdrivers. Like, that's not happening, right? So, I don't know. I think, you know, and I may have gone a little bit off topic here, at least kind of on a tangent, but when it comes to family and friends, if the love's there, you know, it really just comes down to a conversation. I've had conversations with some of the people really close to me in our business where it's like, hey, we got to separate our friendship right now. We really need to talk. Like, hey, this is a problem. Your attitude's a problem. This is a problem. And you're going to be surprised, I think, in having those conversations that they're not going to go the way you think, where maybe they're your friend or your family member is going to be a little prideful. I think you'll be surprised how invested people that love you are truly in your business. And if that love's there, I mean, you also got to trust that you brought them in for a reason. And if they're failing in certain areas, if you haven't done everything you can to talk that out, figure out what the problem is and fix that problem or fix, you know, by looking at yourself, then you shouldn't really be firing anybody at the moment, in my opinion. But I think it really comes down to a gut instinct of, I mean, you guys know best about your businesses. I don't think we've been in business long enough to really have a huge understanding of firing people and all that kind of stuff. But that, from what I know, I mean, that's just kind of the experience we've been in. But yeah, I think that would be kind of the answer to my question.
Well, that's all of the questions. Is there anything else you want to say?
That's it. How long have we been recording? 23 minutes?
No, longer than
that. Yeah, I mean, I do have one more question for you that I want to ask. What is your biggest goal as a contractor?
As a contractor or business owner?
Contractor specifically.
Well, it was to build Drake a house, but I think now it's Kendrick. I'm just kidding. it's interesting. I get told all the time, like, dude, what you're doing is so great. I've been watching you. Business is great. You know, your team's amazing. And, you know, obviously as a business owner, you get all the credit. I think 20% of the credit should really go to me as a business owner. The other 80% goes to my team because everybody sees the leader, but they don't see everybody underneath them that's actually made stuff happen. But as far as contracting goes, you know, we get told all the time how great we are, all the stuff we're doing is so phenomenal and stuff. And yet it's gotten to a point where I think the only challenge our teams truly had is management and not so much construction. And right now we're doing a job that's where, you know, there's this huge multi-million dollar, I think it's like 9,000, maybe 8,000 square foot home, and we're blowing out a wall. And this wall happens to be like a main load bearing wall for two different roof structures. And there's a ton of weight on it. And we got to put the steel beam in and do all these crazy footers and the stem wall and stuff. And it's the first time I actually understood why high end custom home, big custom home builders tell me they don't like to do remodels because it's so difficult. I've never actually kind of felt that way until literally this morning where I'm looking at this. I'm like, dude, this is difficult. I understand why they don't do it, but it was also a challenge. And it was nice to actually have a challenge for once and not just doing a bathroom remodel or a full home remodel where we're just ripping out all the cosmetics and all new flooring, all this. Like, this was building something that is hard and fun and structural. And so I think my biggest goal for contracting right now is to do stuff that people have said can't be done, or stuff that just people are like, how was that even built? How was that even done? I got a little bit of a taste like that. We have a client, actually, he was just on two episodes, Blake Clark. He, you know, he had a header for his boat that needed to get pushed up in his garage for his boat to fit in. And he had gotten a couple bids, and every contractor was talking about ripping the roof off and doing this and blah, blah, blah. And I'm sitting here looking, I'm like, nah, like you don't need to do that. And we ended up doing it. It looks awesome. Looks like it was built this way. The rods are going through the drywall. Like we didn't have to spend 15 grand tearing apart his roof with new trusses, like saving him a ton of money. And he ended up only spending like $4,000. And that created a huge relationship between him and I and our company. But the point being is, like, people find, you know, online, they find all these videos and all these things about, oh, look at this cool shower and this cool tile work. I want to build stuff that it's just like, you don't even know. Like, have you guys ever driven down to a city? Like, we were just in Minneapolis, and I'm looking at some of these structures like, how is that standing on four pillars? A 20-foot story building, or a 20-story building with a pillar on all four ends, huge, with nothing underneath. I'm like I know how it works, but like, that's crazy to me. That's crazy, right? And I want to build stuff like that. You know, you look at like the Eiffel Tower, and like, I want to do crazy stuff like that. And that is way down the road. Construction isn't necessarily my passion, and I hope customers aren't freaking out when they hear this. Like, why am I hiring them if it's construction? Like, I love construction. Don't get me wrong. My passion is doing things, whether it's in business or construction, that is just out of this world. Whether that's creating businesses that operate, you know, differently, different systems that have never been implemented, like just doing stuff that's just like, how do they do that? That's what I want to hear. How is that done? And it's not so much a prideful thing. Maybe it is a pride in our work or what we do, but I would say that was it. Like, one of my main goals has been to build. So I'm a member of Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and I want to build a temple. And for those of you that have been, or I mean, if you've even seen the outside of a temple, the quality of these buildings. Temples, the outside of the temples, the quality of these buildings is remarkable. Now, I've been inside, and I'm a contractor. When I go places, whether it's Peter Piper Pizza, the hospital, doesn't matter, and I'm looking at, you know, I'm using the urinal, and I'm looking at the tile all crooked, and I see all this crappy work that all these companies are doing because it's just another job, and cool, it is what it is. Don't, I'm not dogging you or anything like that. But when I go into the temple, or I look outside of one of those temples, or probably the same thing when you go to Rome and you look at all these crazy artistic buildings, the quality is out of this world. How did they, like, there's not, I mean, I remember inside of the temple, I've been in many rooms, and in the last 5 years of going to that temple inside and outside, I have found probably two blemishes. I don't know how it's done. It's crazy. Like, our jobs are great, but there's always something wrong, and you can go back and fix it, but nothing's ever perfect. And I want to know how that happens. I want to be able to build that. So that's definitely been one of my bigger goals as a contractor, is to be able to build a huge multi-million dollar structure that is everything in it is the highest and finest quality, like the quality of, yeah, monumental quality of a, that you would see back in Egypt. Like, you know what's crazy? I think we've talked about this, like, and this is, you know, construction, you know, talk, but back in the day, they built some phenomenal things. Like, what happened to, yeah, what happened to the Rome times and like all that different, like right now we're building homes that are freaking farmhouse, which I'm not dogging it. I do a lot of remodels. My wife, I think, likes the farmhouse a little bit, but what happened to the engravings and the markings and all this extravagant, different, you know, features and details? Those don't exist anymore. And it's sad because that, like, that's why people go to Rome and Italy and, you know, Europe and all these different places to see all these crazy built buildings. Like our tile guys, and this may be a selling point for anybody wanting to do a remodel right now, but our tile guys are from Romania and they have worked in the churches and these buildings where you see that detail in Romania. And you best believe when they do our tile work, people are in awe. I love that. Right? They were trained, whatever, great. But like, that is what I want to bring back. I want to get rid of this square header, wood header, this, that. Like, I want to build stuff that looks like it's floating and nobody knows how it freaking is above the ground right now. And it's not going to fall with a tornado or an earthquake. That's what I want to build. A lot, big road to get there, but that's definitely, I think, the contractor goal. And again, I mean, it may sound like it's my passion. It's not necessarily my passion. Business is my passion. People are my passion. But that is pretty dang cool. You know, I saw a meme the other day, you know, my driving with my husband. He's like, I built that. I did that road. I built that. And I feel like I'm like that with my wife. But that would be so cool when you're not pointing at just a simple little sign or like a patio you built or even just a house, but you're pointing at something like how. How, you know, yeah. I think we're all daydreaming in here now, just talking about this. Like, yeah, I mean, it's I don't know. There's just some crazy stuff, you know, and the only part with that is the only people that are going to build that kind of stuff are people with money. So right now we're focusing on relationships, trying to get to meet some of the people who have the money to be able to do that. But I mean, even now you look at like houses, like I'm not trying to dog anybody's house. Okay. But like, Rick Ross's house, Shaquille O'Neal's house, like their mansions, they look cool, but that's not a wow factor to me. You're wowing at how big it is. But I want structures that people haven't seen in a very long time. Shoot, if I could build a pyramid, I would love to build a pyramid again. It'd be insane.
Getting me hyped up right now.
I know. It would be insane, but
that would be very fun.
Yeah.
All right, well, I guess I have one more question too to end it. To end the podcast is, will you be voting for a convicted felon in 2024?
Oh my God.
Make America great again.
There you have it, folks. We're getting canceled. 2024.
Yeah, I know. The whole political crap and everything going on is crazy. You know, I thought this is a great lesson just for in entrepreneurship, but you know, so many people were talking about, Blake talked about this, right? Like the economy, like how the election was going to be, and everybody wait, oh, I don't know if I want to do this yet because of the economy and blah, blah, blah. And out of what, 6,000 realtors, only 600 have sold a house in this year. And he sold like 100 and something. Like, I don't even remember the statistics. You guys can go back to two episodes ago when he was in here. But same thing for us. Like right now, work is getting pretty crazy as far as vendors. We have vendors coming in our office, dropping off stuff like, hey, you know, we're, you know, this is what we do. We have vendors hitting us on every social media platform. They're calling us, they're emailing us. 2 years ago, we didn't have that in construction. 2 years ago, people were, you know, we couldn't get vendors to bid on our dang projects, let alone even get in contact with them because there was just such a huge influx of work. Now it's the opposite. Now I'm sure there's people who have not given us the time of day that are wishing we would return their calls. But the point being is, if you build a reputation for yourself, if you build a reputation and you have the mindset of abundance, no matter what happens with the economy, whether there's an election, whether Joe Biden falls over on his face and the economy collapses, like whatever the case is, you're going to be successful. Like there is a way to succeed. There is a way to maintain your business in any era, in any time. I don't care if it's the Great Depression. What I can tell you right now is millionaires were made during the Great Depression. There were businesses that didn't go under during the Great Depression. And if you're getting mad because your grandpa was in the Great Depression, I'm sorry, but that is what I truly believe. Like there is truly so many different ways to make money, establish your company, and there are people, always people with money. So like right now, if the economy starts, you know, they've been talking about recession forever, but economy has kind of slowed down, right? So, you know, 2 years ago, we weren't getting the amount of volume of work we were getting. But what we did is we ended up making our clientele the people that have money. And guess what? We still are signing contracts for $500,000 remodel that, you know, other people can't even get a bathroom remodel right now for. And I'm not bragging. My point is that if you focus on building reputation and focus on putting yourself in front of people with money, you're always going to have money because you're going to surround yourself with people who spend money, right? Because the rich will always be rich for the most part. I mean, sometimes people go under, right? But the people with money are always going to have money and they're always going to have to spend money. But that's just how it is, right? So I think that's a great learning lesson. I don't know if I'm sounding like a complete douche right now, but what was question number four? What was question number four? I also think, you know, and again, I at this point, I'm just kind of going through this. You know, this is what, episode 23 of a podcast. And so I've gone from being very, how was your day, to being a little bit more loose, but kind of jumping around places here. If you guys as leaders, and this is just a thought that's coming to my head, if you guys as leaders are prideful, are entitled because you're the leader, you are going to make a lot more enemies than you are friends, and you're not going to have, people are not going to want to follow that. Derek Price, we haven't dropped this episode yet as of today, but by the time you hear this episode, it will have been dropped. You know, he talked about his experience as a CEO of an addiction hospital and how he turned that company around from literally they were in the middle of filing bankruptcy, or they had filed bankruptcy, and he ended up saving the company all because he picked up cigarette butts. Like, it's so hard. You know, people always ask, like, does money change you? Like, and I don't even have a lot of money, but honestly, I have been asked that. If you guys truly let money turn you into where you have that entitlement, like, oh, well, I'm the guy who pays for everything. I mean, as an owner and as people in leadership, like different positions, I do think, like, hey, you're not like necessarily everybody else. There are certain benefits and stuff that you get and being that position that you've earned to be in. But at the end of the day, if you have that mentality of, well, because I said so, or, well, because I paid for it, or, well, because just too bad, this is my company, you're going to lose great people. I've had that mentality before, unfortunately. And now I've learned when to have that mentality and when not to. At the end of the day, if you're an owner, you're still an owner. So sometimes you have to put your foot down and be like, hey, dude, either way, it's my decision. But a lot of the other times is you have to listen, you have to be open-minded, you have to invite people to share that criticism, invite people to share their ideas and really try to listen and not turn them down. I still struggle with that, but I understand that that needs to happen. And in understanding that, since I have, you know, come to that understanding, I think our company's changed a lot. I think we've worked a lot better with people. You know, we just had a leadership meeting just the other week where we were talking about certain things that weren't working. And, again, leadership team, I love you guys, but I'm just sharing this in my head. You know, we were talking about all these things that, you know, our guys weren't doing, and, you know, how many times, you know, we've told them 80 million times to do this and they just can't grasp it. And then I'm like, well, you know, we came to the conclusion as a team that, you know, well, are we doing this? Are we setting this example? And in reality, that answer was no. I think it was a hard pill to swallow for all of us that were in that meeting. But it's true. It really is true. Now, like I said, there is a balance there. You know, my brother, you know, we have a fridge in the front of our office that are for customers only. And every now and then, maybe more often than I should, I grab a Red Bull out of there because there's Red Bulls and I don't have any in my personal fridge. And so my brother, being my brother, grabs some, and some of our guys grab some. And, you know, our office manager, bless her heart, Cheyenne, who's an absolutely OG, she's like Donna from Suits, you know, she gets mad about it. And she gets mad when I do it too, but I have that mentality like, well, I'm paying for them. I can take it if I want to. But at the end of the day, you know, it really comes down to that example. If I didn't take those Red Bulls out, would my team, they wouldn't even dare, right? And, you know, question number four, whoever asked that question, like, especially working family and friends, I think it's okay to have a certain, you know, entitlement. Like for me, if I worked for my best friend or worked for my dad, I would think like, I mean, hey, I would still, one, there's the incentive to bust my butt even harder. There's the incentive to do even more because I don't want to let them down. But there's also that like, hey, well, I'm going to just go in and grab something out of his fridge because, you know, we've been friends or he's been my dad, you know, like I can do that. Normal employees can't do that. There are benefits to some things. And I think that's totally okay to have, but there is a line. And if you cross that line, all of a sudden people are getting taken advantage of. People aren't doing their stuff. People are above other people. You can't have that. You have to be able to keep everybody on an equal level playing field, including yourself. Now, with that being said, not your employees are not going to be driving, you know, Ferraris. If you're driving a Ferrari, that's not how it works. You still have to also at the same time, keep that competitiveness of live. And it's just a fine line. I think it's interesting and it's been interesting to learn what that line is and truly come to understand how everybody works. Some people, you know, will light up in the morning with a Chipotle burrito, a Los Favs burrito. If you haven't been there, you need to go. That is a promo. And some other people are like, hey, I don't care about this burrito. I need $1,000 check, $1,000 bonus, Mike. And so it's like, you got to learn, you know, what, there's a entitlement right there. I'm cheating. But no, like seriously, you got to learn who you're working with. You got to understand them. We're still going through that. And I think as you get bigger, you're consistently going through that. I think, you know, some of the biggest, most successful companies in Arizona are still learning how to deal with that, how to deal with, you know, they went from 50 employees to 200 employees. Like you can't be as personal at that point. You have to still be able to know the people you work with. And, you know, I don't know. I think it's interesting, but I think 100% you have to eliminate that mentality that like, hey, too bad, so sad you work for me, because you're never gonna get anything done. People are not gonna follow you. Like I said, I've had that in my life, and especially like, you know, I think it's interesting. I'm going to talk about me, Mikey, and Kyle here just because we're all in the room, but you know, we've been best friends for what, like a year for like ever. And, you know, we've gone through so much, like, right. I mean, in high school, we were in sports. We were all friends together. Kyle, Mikey hung out more. I didn't really hang out too much with Mikey. He was kind of that, good looking douchebag that everybody wanted to date in high school. Kyle was that guy that everybody loved. Everybody still loves him. And then I was kind of that nerdy jock, hang out with all the nerds. But then, you know, I played sports and I was always tied up in a relationship. So I didn't really hang out with friends too much, unfortunately, but, we've been through a lot. And then we went through and we lived together, you know, we were kind of homeless together for a little while. And then we lived together for a while. Then we got a condo and that's what I'm talking about. No, so we've been through a lot, and so it's been interesting. I'm sure they can, you know, attest to this, but like going from that to where, you know, we were talking about like, hey, out of us three, doesn't matter who makes it, whoever makes it, you know, we're going to take care of everybody else, right? And so I do think that was an immature thought to a point, because it was more, we were relying on Mikey to make beats and get famous. And we'll post his link to SoundCloud down below or iTunes Music if you guys want to check that out. But, you know, that didn't happen, and there's nothing wrong with that. Obviously he makes killer beats, but that wasn't what life held for him or us at all. And so then it came down to, you know, we separated. I went on a mission, came back. I started this company. They were doing stuff. Mikey was a loan officer for a company. Kyle was the freaking best and most beast bartender you're ever going to meet. And so we all kind of separated. And then it just kind of, you know, like, hey, the initial thought was like, well, we all wanted to work together. So we all started working together. But it's been an interesting transition to, I think for them and me to really understand like, hey, we're all friends, but we still have a job to do. We still have a business to run. We still have to make money. And at the end of the day, like, unfortunately and fortunately, I'll say that and maybe explain it later, but fortunately and unfortunately, like, I have to make the final decisions. And it's been a growing opportunity for all of us to learn when to let down our pride and when to not let down our pride in order to thrive and work together. I think we're all three, for the most part, kind of the alpha minds, where we all just, we're naturally just always kind of been in charge and stuff like that, and kind of been, you know, the spotlight in a crowd. And so putting us all three together, obviously we're bound to hit heads, but it's taking time. And that's why a lot of people will tell you, don't work with family, don't work with friends. I swear, if I had a dime for every time I heard that. I've been a part of coaching programs where the first thing the person told me was like, you got to fire your family and friends. Like, no, that's not going to work. And for me, it was a challenge because nobody believed it could happen. And I was like, okay, we're going to make it happen. But that's why, because people can't let down their pride. People can't understand, that, you know what, obviously we're friends, but there's a time where we're friends and there's a time when we're hustling and making money. And I think we've been able to do that pretty well. I think we still struggle at times, mostly when Mikey's being a complete douchebag, but but for the most part, it's been working out. And and understanding, yeah, like I said, understanding when to be able to do that is really going to dictate the success between any friends. And so sometimes you have to have that conversation. Mikey's had the conversation with me. We're like, dude, you don't listen. You shoot down all my ideas. And I've had the conversation. I'm like, well, dude, you just annoy me too much. And, you know, but we've been able to work through it. Second part wasn't so true, but the first part, yes, he has told me that. And understanding, like, hey, again, I could have sat there and been like, well, I'm the owner, too bad, I pay you a check. But that's not how I think, and that's not how anybody should think, because the reaction you're going to get to that is, well, peace out, dude. Like, especially when there's two people that are, you know, kind of leaders in nature in that meeting, like, that's not going to work. And so instead it's like, okay, I hear you. It's kind of like a relationship with marriage, right? Okay, I hear you. Now here's what I think. Here's this. And being able to actually work together to be able to make the dream work. Good team makes the dream work. So I think that's been a huge growing part for us. And I think there's a lot more to come. But for the most part, yeah, pride definitely ruins things. And if you can learn how to accept criticism and how to give criticism without offending people, you're going to be able to grow together and make a family company work. There's a statistic, 98% of a small business. So a small business is any business that operates under, I believe, $200 million a year in revenue. It might be $100 million, something like that. But I mean, that's, first of all, to me, that's not a small company. I mean, if you're doing $50 million a year, you're not a small company. You got 30, 40 employees. Like, that's not a small company to me. But what I will say is, 98% of small businesses are family owned and operated. That's crazy. You got all these people out here, don't work with family. You know, it never works out. But yet 98% of all small businesses are family. People are they're a little bit ignorant. They don't know what, they must not know that statistic. But whether it's salesman or whether it's like, even if it's like, okay, well, you know, family owned and operated, that could be a husband and wife, but everybody else is strangers. That could be a two brothers and everybody else is strangers. That could be, you know, a brother and a sister as a secretary. Those are like people. I mean, 98% of small businesses are family owned and operated. So, hey, there you go. At the end of the day, people can make that work. But what happens is you just hear those stories of people butting heads and, you know, my father does nothing and I do all the work 24/7. Like, dude, that doesn't just happen in business. My first partnership, I won't name him here because he might listen to my podcast. But I remember, and again, I just remember feeling like, hey, he's like, hey, I need to set up QuickBooks and get all this set up. And it took 3 weeks for him to set up QuickBooks. And I was the guy outside in the field sweating, running the crews and doing everything. And yet we were making the same amount of money. And not to say that he didn't deserve that, but there just wasn't an equal pool. And we were a startup, so it didn't make sense to me. So, you know, if you guys can really understand when to drop your pride, really understand that it takes team effort. I truly believe that is what has separated us in the construction game is, you know, in construction, client hires contractor. Who's responsible? Contractor. That's not how we run the game here. Client hires elder. Who's responsible? Client and elder. It's a teamwork because if the client doesn't do their part, we fail. If we don't do our part, we fail, right? But the client, whether it's picking stuff out, it's making decisions, or it's paying us on time, or it's making sure that they understand and are listening when we're communicating timelines and they're actually checking in on Builder Trend. Which is a software that we use for everything. I have clients who are like, well, what's going on next week? I have no clue. I'm like, well, we've been in your job 5 weeks. Have you checked our software? Like, have you logged onto your portal to actually look at the day logs and what's going on? You have literally 24/7 access to the schedule. Oh no, I haven't. Okay. Well, guess what? Now you're stressing out my PM, which is stressing out our team. We feel like we have an unhappy customer because you're ticked off and you haven't done what we agreed to do together. So we are now changing the mindset in the game that, like, hey, when a client hires a contractor, it's not just contractor is going to provide me with everything I'm asking for. It is a teamwork. And if the client doesn't do their part, then that refrains us from doing our part. So there's obviously there's a lot more responsibility on the contractor side, but there is a good amount of responsibility on the client side. And so the clients that understand that, that hear us and understand that, those jobs go great. We still have clients that we tell this to, we go through documentation and they don't understand that they take 80 years to reply to us. And, well, my job's been running for 5 months. I'm like, yeah, well, let's look at all these texts for the last 4 weeks. We've been asking you to make the decision that's been holding up progress on your job. Oh yeah, sorry, dude, I've just been so busy. Well, sucks. Like, what can we do, right? We're not gonna make the decision for you. So really understanding that teamwork and that everybody has a responsibility, whether you're an employee, whether you're the owner, whether you're a shareholder or a client, everybody has a responsibility, and understanding how those responsibilities all work together to make a dream come to life, a vision come to life, that is success, truly success. So, well, I'm going to have to listen back to this podcast because I feel like I went a million different ways, but at the end of the day, you know, guys, entrepreneurship is difficult. I don't think anybody prepares you for the journey. But what I will say, it's so rewarding. It's rewarding. And when you can bring in amazing people like we have here at Elder, the people that really take their role as if they are an owner as a company and everybody's on equal level playing field and everybody cares as much as the next person, that changes the game. It really does. So, thank you guys for tuning in to the Homework Assignment Podcast. We have another guest speaker coming to you next week. If you haven't listened to some of the past speakers, we've had some amazing speakers on this show. I'm very grateful for the people who have joined this show. I think it would, you know, normally takes a very long time to get some of the relationship that we have into these podcast recordings, and we've been fortunate enough to have those people be in full support of us. So go listen to them, guys. There's a ton of great stuff. Again, whether it's about business or entrepreneurship, to me they're both the same thing. You're an entrepreneur of your own life as well as a business, or you're an entrepreneur of a business and you're an entrepreneur of your own life, and they just go hand in hand. And you can't succeed truly. True success is not one-sided. It requires success in both areas. So check it out. We have links below. Follow our Elder Contracting page on Instagram and Facebook. Keep up to date on kind of what we're doing. We always got amazing stuff, events going on, promos, all that fun stuff. And for the most part, please like, follow, share. If you guys know someone that's joining this journey or is in this journey, please share the show with them. We're trying to just share our, you know, experience and everything with everybody out there and give back a little bit to help people understand the journey and the life of entrepreneurship. So thanks for joining.
We got to talk about that bonus though, for real.